No, I've had little paper on them.
They're not me, they're not loud talkers.
No, probably. Deathless kinds of people. What should we look at this evening? Jeff?
First of all, it's wonderful to be in a privileged environment. And at the monastery specifically. Really, everything just facilitates awareness. And it's just, nature, the silence, what everybody is doing and not doing, it all just facilitates the being present and seeing things. Mm-hmm. It's really, really
and wonderful. Hearing things.
Right? Yeah.
Those voices in the head get very loud, don't they, when there's nothing else going on? not very loud necessarily in any way other than you get to hear them because there's nothing else going on.
Right. So I've been, have a little koan going on around acid reflux. Just paying attention to what's going on here. So it has flared up during this trip that I've been on for about a week and a half so far. And so just, it occurred to me that I could have that as a koan, what's going on there, like I could have mental, spiritual content. I could have a physical content going on as well. So I like for today, I decided I would avoid wheat entirely. And as much as I could, I think I did. Because that's something that I normally at home avoid most all of the time. Just trying things, just paying attention, seeing what goes on.
And does it flare up with some regularity? Do you recognize any kind of pattern with it?
It has flared up a lot in the last, say, whenever it started, maybe 2.5 years ago, I'm not sure exactly. It's not extremely clear. So I was, at one point I was taking two medications, not counting the one I'm taking for the acid reflux. And, it seemed that as I lowered that second medication, the reflux got better. But then it came back after being off that medication. Mm-hmm.
The thing that most fascinates me about things physical is that something caused it. Mm. It wasn't there. Right? And then it is. So it just always interests me. And then we start medicating. Mm. We don't actually know what caused it, but we start medicating it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I have gone along with that process. I don't like taking medication in general, and certainly not this one. There are concerns about it on the part of a lot of alternative healthcare people. And the symptoms have been, from fairly early on, shortness of breath because the reflux gets in the lungs. So that's the way I've gone medicating it, I don't know if I could have done it differently, more consciously, if I could do it again. And I can do it now.
It did it again. To me, it's just interesting. And that once we start down that path, we kind of get focused on the medication.
Mm.
And what happens when I take it or what happens when I don't take it. We sort of lose sight of this whole other thing about what is happening with the body that this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're so conditioned to think that things because we're so firmly conditioned to believe in our separation from everything else, we think everything else is separate from everything else, rather than the awareness that everything is we could say everything is interrelated, we could say it's interconnected, or we could just go all Buddhist on it and say it's all one.
Yes.
And I realize, of course, when you start getting things like shortness of breath, then you have an anxiety condition that comes with that, and probably a depression, and maybe insomnia, and things sort of compound after a while. But just to as you're looking at it, to always to keep that original, which is why I always ask. What else is going on? Because we tend not to pay attention, then there's something happens, and we start paying attention as if that's the starting point. But very often, that's actually, we could almost call it the end point of that, because we just tuned into everything. We didn't tune into everything that came before this. We just tuned into this. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes our starting point. So now what do I do about this? I've read for years that psychiatrists, psychotherapists, and many doctors will say that most conditions will improve in about 2 months if left untreated.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But that we jump in and start treating things, and then the body doesn't have a chance to, or the mind, doesn't have a chance to return to any kind of equilibrium, then now we're participating in dealing with the condition that was there that might actually have passed, might have gone back into some sort of balance had we not intervened. But we're trained to be afraid, and so we're trained to, oh my God, this is happening. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I stop this? How do I stop this from being like this?
Yeah. Do you have any suggestions at this point in terms of places to look or ways to practice with it?
Well, just that. Just the paying attention. And so pay attention to everything and don't believe anything. And above all, don't take any of it personally. Right, that's the hardest part, is keeping that illusion of a separate self out of the mix. But if we just pay attention, so as you know, in our practice, we finally got to the point of saying, please don't tell me again what the voices in your head are saying. Okay, because we all know what the voices in everybody's head says. We did that. We know that's not helpful. So in that same way, we don't want to turn it into now ego has me just microscopically focused on every little single thing about me. Because when we get into that state, what can happen to us is we start attending to things that, again, would not be anything if there weren't that, was that a cringe? I think that was pain. Sure, that was pain. So just to pay attention to the fluctuations that we go through all the time with everything.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you have a lot of energy, sometimes not so much. Sometimes you're really hungry, sometimes you're not that hungry. Sometimes you want to eat just nothing but kale. Mm-hmm. And then other times, you move on to spinach. So just paying attention to that kind of flow, we begin to realize that there are a lot of that we are just perpetual motion machines, right? Everything is going all the time, and everything is connected to everything, and everything sets everything off. And one little thing gets a little out of balance, and then it throws something else off, and something else off, and something else off. But if we continue to take the best care of ourselves that we can, which is a whole mind-body endeavor, right? So, getting enough sleep and eating well and keeping the attention here instead of off in problems and troubles and imaginary worlds, probably we have our best chance of coming back into an equilibrium.
Thank you.
It's like your doctor saying, take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning. Oh, there might have been something helpful in that, but I don't know what it was.
No. No, I think there's a lot more in that because there's the opportunity for awareness practice.
Yes.
Around it all.
Yes.
And there's a lot of guidance in all that you said. But ultimately, it isn't like my doctor saying, oh, do this, and right, it's more...
Right. Well, in a way, it's the exact opposite, isn't it?
Mm.
There isn't any do this in it.
Mm.
There's just that general being present to a human being and doing the best we can for that human being. And, of course, the thing that I always like to remind all of us as often as possible, we are going to die.
Yeah.
And so to live focused on something that is not actually happening right now, that fear of what this means and what's going to happen and what's going to happen to me, and it can take over our lives,
mm-hmm.
such that even though I'm not dying right now, I'm also not living.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever is going on, I'm just convinced, I don't know, we'll see, you know, maybe some of you will be around for these discoveries, but that what people are going to finally conclude, for people on the cusp of wondering about this, is that the attitude of mind is determining what's happening with us. Mm-hmm. It's what is deciding what's going on with the immune system, what's going on with the nervous system. Every aspect of the body is controlled, basically, by our attitude of mind. And so when we are off in conditioned mind in the past, in the future, in stress, and anxiety, and worry, and all those things, the body just cannot stand up under the pressure of it. But to be here, to be happy, to be grateful, whatever is going on, helps the body to the best that it can do.
Yeah, it's... That kind of idea is not completely new to me, and yet I've had all kinds of health issues in the last whatever period of time. I guess that the same attitude of mind that we were just talking about with all of it.
Yes.
To just get curious about all of it.
Yes.
Not from a place of solving, fixing, fear.
Yes. Obsessive analysis.
Right.
Yeah.
But from a place of, okay, well.
Yes, and never to forget the importance of focusing on all of the things that are working.
Mm.
Because, you know, I have a pain somewhere, or I have a cold, or I have a flu, or I have a broken leg, or... Oh, a broken wrist. And if I'm not really paying attention, that becomes my whole world. And I forget that everything else is working just fine. And then I suspect that, that all of the support is withheld from all that is going well, and all of the attention is going to what's wrong, and that becomes the quality of our lives.
Rebecca, did I see?
Yeah, thank you. Well, that was very fascinating and very applicable, I think, to what I'm looking at. I'm having those kind of experiences where there are lots of big chunks of processes and things that I'm looking at that I know in some way are very much all one. So this may sound a little disjointed, but it may be a... maybe one of those
problems. Having one of your tapestry moments.
Exactly. That's it. Thank you. So one of the pieces is the Musings article that I wanted to look at. So especially the words of the song from Jesus Christ Superstar in the Garden of Gethsemane. And the way I'm relating or identifying with that is there seem to be so many things that are just in this major change, major change. What's happening in the world, even some aspects of my own personal life, and then to see that in the Musings articles, the anguish that I that certainly in those other two places. And somewhat in mine too.
If I'm remembering the lyrics probably that you're referring to, God, thy will is hard, but you hold every card, which kind of speaks to what Jeff is looking at too.
Yes. And then the line, this isn't really what it's saying, but the paraphrasing. Fine, take me now before I change my mind. That ever since the first time I heard that, that has been like, you know, that 20 seconds of insane courage. Okay.
I'm willing.
I'm willing, but it's with this fine. Mm-hmm. Kind of attitude.
Well, I get it. I have no choice.
Yeah.
So I might as well say yes.
Yes.
Now, what we know, of course, is you can say yes ahead of time.
Yeah.
Which he did.
He did.
As far as we can tell.
Yeah.
He said yes, said yes, and said yes, and said yes, and finally got the big opportunity to say yes, and... it's harder than he thought.
And he still said yes.
And he still said yes.
That then I was inspired, now I'm sad and tired or something like that, you know, and it's...
tried for 3 years, seems like 30.
Yeah.
Feels like 90.
Yeah. And I keep thinking, too, of Jeremiah in the Hebrew scriptures of, you duped me, and I let myself be duped. God, I felt that so many times, you know. Like... I didn't know it was going to be like this, you know. But all of
I thought I was going to get my way.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like, what do they call it? Levitating and meditating in bliss and all those things. And then it turns out it's a lot more than that. Yeah. And yet the willingness keeps being here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's not always that hard.
Yes, it really is true. Yeah, and something dropped in today as I was walking around the property, and it was this sentence: "We've got to get serious about this conscious, compassionate action movement." I think there's so much in that for what this anguish place is, for what's happening in the world and everything. It's like a refuge, I think.
The action, the involvement, the engagement?
No, the conscious, compassionate action.
Engagement. is somewhere to go with that, all of that anguish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not to feel helpless.
Yeah. Yeah, and yes. And an experience I had when I voted this year has been puzzling me. And so I'd like to put it out there and just look at it. I cast what I probably was the most intelligent ballot I've ever cast in my life, because I had some help with some, from someone who I think is very knowledgeable, and you know, and I just felt so good about every single vote on that ballot. And then I put it in the mail, and I had the strongest feeling of being played by the whole system, by the whole system. And I'm reading Tolstoy's The Kingdom of God is Within You, and I tell you, that book, I kind of looked over my shoulder every now and then, like, this is subversive stuff that he's writing, you know. And and so I've been looking at all of this, is a whole other piece, around non-cooperation and Gandhi's whole, you know, angle on everything. And I really don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just sort of putting the pieces out. But it was such a feeling of, what are we doing, you know, with all of this? And that, maybe that's where I'm really longing for the conscious, compassionate action piece of it.
I just did a little newsletter article that I think you're familiar with, but I redid it for a broader audience. Mm-hmm. And the point that I'm trying to make there is that rather than getting into resisting, a la Count Lev Tolstoy, rather than resisting, the important thing for us is to choose. We have to choose. We can't, if we chose to, live our lives against something. Mm-hmm. But from the point of view of this practice, the way we talk about that is that that's what ego is.
Yeah.
Ego is a no to life's yes. And so if we align ourselves with that, then that's where we are. We are against. But if we choose what we want, then our energy is being replenished by a yes, rather than depleted by a no.
Yes.
So part of the point of it was that, you know, people get all fired up and riled up and go out there and they're gonna, and then something happens and they either, their side wins or their side loses. But if their side wins, then the tendency is just to collapse, because you've been pushing this back for so long, and the danger in that is the loss of choice, because all we were doing was being against something. So the importance of realizing in our lives that our opportunity, to me, is to choose.
Yeah.
To choose. And so if compassion is what's important to you, then, you know, the circumstances of the world don't actually matter.
Yeah.
I mean, we would like to have it go in a way that is kinder, more gentle, more loving, more inclusive, accepting, all of those kinds of things, because being good to people is just something we'd like to have happen. Being good to creatures, being good to nature, something that we would like to have happen. Mm-hmm. But our choice for compassion is not dependent upon that.
Yeah.
It's like the person who got who it was that said, well, what if they call the war and nobody came?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Tolstoy is suggesting.
Yeah. Well, and it, when it's expressed that way, we can see how crazy it is. But the fear that, but I can't be the only one. Right. I can't be the only one not going to war, not doing my bit, as the Brits like to talk about it.
Well, that part about the choosing and the energy dynamic around the resisting, I think I saw a version of that played out when I was visiting family. It was right when all this stuff was happening on the border, and everybody in this household that I was staying in, they watched Stephen Colbert every day, and, you know, and it was all that just, oh, it's so terrible, and, oh, you know, all the against and resist and all that. And you know, everyone was saying, we need to call our legislators, and we need to, and yeah. And a day passed, and 2 days passed, and 2.5 days passed. I was the only one who had called anybody, you know? And I kept saying, you know, it's easy. You can just...
Here's the number, here's the phone.
And you can just add Siri. Siri will tell you, you know? It's just so easy nowadays. And it was fascinating to me how that, I mean, finally one of them called, you know, one of them in the household besides me. Now tell me again, what do I say, you know, and I thought I did, and it actually happened. But it was, there's an element of, I think it was that dynamic of, we're in resist, we're not in choose, or, you know, maybe we can say, we're in what's wrong, we're not in act, you know.
Yes.
And until, and I think, and I project, there's just so little ability to train the attention or to focus the attention, keep the attention long enough to actually make the phone call, you know. So it was just a fascinating illustration, I think, of what you're pointing to. Yeah. So again, that's why I think this practice and this movement would be, I think, so helpful. Is so helpful. Thank you.
There's a really good piece quote that addressed that I have posted. It's on while I was gone. It's about not expending any energy on resisting or being shocked by or appalled by, mm-hmm. but all the energy going into amelioration, because otherwise you don't have enough energy.
That's right. Yeah. People just wear themselves out,
yeah.
being outraged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just testify to life's care for one. I had this accident at the end of our trip in Great Britain, and I fell off a wall, and it happened that we had friends who had rented a cottage nearby, and they happened to have a car. We had never been near a car, and they had a car. So they came and picked me up and took me back to their cottage in England. There isn't any ice. They had ice. So I iced my wrist, and then the hotel we happened to stay in that night was the only one we had that had a refrigerator in the room, so I put the ice in the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. Iced it again in the morning. And it happened that the next day the guy with the car was just happening to go to the place where the hospital was. He was going there anyway. So at the hospital, and they did these x-rays, and they put this thing on my arm. It's Britain. I said, how much do I owe you? They
said,
nothing.
Healthcare. Anybody who is falling for an American view of healthcare. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. That. Yes.
Yes.
I too have that experience.
Yes. So I mean, it was like everything that could have fallen into place to make this as easy as it could possibly fall into place.
Uh-huh.
And then right after I fell. It happens that on that in the little group you're in, one of the women is a nurse, and she said, "Well, put your hand up near your heart." I would never have known to do that, but it keeps it from swelling so much.
Uh-huh.
So I did, and so it's just like all these little pieces fall into place to make it as easy as it could possibly be. Mm-hmm. And so then we were about to come back, and the night before we left, we had a meal, and three of us got food poisoning. So we were violently ill. And as I was lying there in bed, I fell asleep, and I woke up one night, and I had this vision of this, like, a ring of light,
around me that said, you are absolutely held in unconditional love. You're surrounded by people unconditionally loving. There's nothing to worry about. Mm. I know. And then we had to postpone the trip for 2 days because we were busy being sick. So it happens that one of the people we walk with lives half an hour from the airport, and she came and picked us up and took me to her house. So we were on this beautiful farm for 2 days. Mm. And then we came back. And it just felt like all the way along, and you know, we talk about how life takes care of us, mm-hmm. and it was so my experience that in every respect, what could have been kind of a really bad thing, life was there taking care of me every step of the way.
And you could have missed all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could have.
If you chose to.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you could have just been lost in, what an idiot, and how did that happen, and why me, and isn't this awful?
Well, yeah, and that, you know, that was the other thing. That was, I think you ended up, what an idiot. I mean, I had an accident.
Right.
And so I was having to do things like, you know, could you tie my shoes? Could you help me put my clothes on? And what was so interesting to me, and I really credit practice with this, I didn't have any sense of needing to be apologetic about that.
Oh.
Because the fact was, I needed help.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason to apologize for needing help.
Right.
I need help.
Right.
And
you would have been just as quick to assist somebody else who needed help.
Yeah. In fact, it was funny because there was a woman I had to ask to tie my shoes that I previously tied her shoes. She was feeling really stiff and couldn't bend over. I said, I'll tie your shoes. And about 2 days later, I said, and when we went to our friend through the farm, I watched the words arise that at first I didn't say. I was going to say, I'm so sorry to do this to you. And I thought, A, I'm not sorry,
uh-huh.
and B, I'm not doing anything to it. But it's so interesting how that language just arises.
Yes.
But all we did was ask, you know, could you help us? And she said yes. That's all that was going on. So it was just, it just felt clean, you know, and it felt like just the benefits of practice and paying attention and not saying false things. Trying to say true things. And just say, well, the true thing right now is I'm injured.
Mm-hmm.
That's it?
Yes. And I have food poisoning. Talk about a delightful conversation.
That's right. And, but it appears that the last 2 days, I really feel like I reached into something approaching normal health.
Wow.
Yeah. But thank you to practice.
The one-handed. Think about it.
There's something I'd like to look at that just occurred to me to bring to guidance recently, and it's kind of an let's see. It's kind of along the lines of what Asoda was talking to you, not about sex, but you know,
about dancing and sex.
Yeah.
Make those parties weird.
But one of those things about you don't hear anybody talk about, and I realize it keeps so it just keeps you in this place of, well, actually. Just like separate or different than, or you know, it flips back and forth from being accusing a place of being really weird to being really special, you know, just kind of like, mm-hmm. yeah. And so I just saw that it would might be useful to just say,
yeah, everybody, it changed everybody's life,
right?
Also, yes.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Well, anyway, so I've been having this experience of kind of encountering visitors to the monastery, but they're not coming through the registration office. They're not. Folks can't.
I
seem to be the only one that sees. And so that's so I don't want to keep that to myself, you know. And it's funny that I see it only around the monastery itself, like around in the garden and around the hall and most of the time I'm just aware. It's just like, just catches me out of the corner, you know, just catches the corner of my eye, like, oh, somebody just went by. But nobody did go by. Mm-hmm. You know, when I turned to look, there's something, you know, wait. And then the other day I was down at the pavilion, and this time there, I did see, I don't know how you say, I saw, but, you know, not like I can see you, but there was this elderly gentleman there in overalls, and he was just the kindest, most loving, and he was just kind of bent down there on one knee, and he had me in his, he was looking at me with just a lot of love. And so it just, I've had off and on experiences like this in the past, but they seem to be more frequent lately. Mm-hmm.
And there's no element of fear for you in it.
There's absolutely none. I mean, it's like it does not feel like anything threatening at all. In fact, it feels kind of enriching. Like, wow. There's just a whole lot of dimensions of life that seem to be seem to be good. Mm-hmm. It's just a feeling of goodness. Mm-hmm. and not at all anything to be frightened of or mm-hmm. but anyway, so and it's just something that
you also knew Walter, who was a psychic and a clairvoyant, and at one point we were talking about something, and he said, you know how when you walk into a room and all the people who have lived there are there? And I said, actually, no, Walter. I don't have that experience. And for him, it was just such a normal part of his life that it always surprised him that other people didn't have the experience.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've had the sense of like, wow. Are these folks that you know had something to do with the monastery in the past, or drawn to the monastery just because of the what's here? You know, I don't know, but the traffic seems to be increasing, and
are you feeling like we should run them through the registration get personal information to find out that they have any special needs? It's really handy because we don't need to provide them with a bed or meals, or
really, if we
just join
them,
in.
If we could teach them how to garden instead of just flitting around the garden, if they could just stop and do something,
That could be helpful. And yet, you don't know that they're not.
Has
never been so abundant.
It's true.
Yeah.
This is a bad season, but yes.
In general, yes. Well, it's a bad season for everything. Yeah. Although not as bad as usual. Mm-hmm. What a great year so far. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we've mm-hmm. been dying for 2 months last year at this time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just.
I would not worry about
don't
it.
Worry
myself.
About. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wouldn't get fascinated by it, and I wouldn't get concerned about it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like it hasn't. Yeah, it's why I never thought to bring it to guidance. It's like, oh well, that happened. Oh well, that happened. You know, and then I just never.
I think, and you probably remember this because I'm sure you've heard me tell this story, but the first time that I looked at this property, mm-hmm. the gate was there, and this road into here was there, and the gate was locked, and the realtor didn't have a key to it, so we parked the car up there and walked down the road. And when I got to this place, that looked, of course, nothing like this at that point, but I sensed people walking around the property, and I knew this was the place.
Wow.
I mean, that those were the people, you know, represented the people who would live here, who would be here, who would make this place.
Interesting. Well, there may be more books coming on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin.
Well, that sort of reminded me of an experience that I've had very recently. I had a dream that was very different than any kind of dream I ever had before.
We're trying to scare Christopher. He's been here often enough to know that it's very, very awful.
We're usually normal.
We're really normal.
On Sunday we were kind of normal, but
we were pretty
this isn't anything scary or too weird. It's just that, you know, oft times I will wake up and have kind of a little glimmer of this or that and the other thing, and by the time I actually realize I'm having a glimmer, it's gone, I don't remember. But when I remember dreams, oftentimes there's something that I'm trying to do and it seems like I can't accomplish it. You know, there's always an obstacle or something or other, you know, and there's all this efforting and I'm lost or I don't have what I need to be where I am and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I had this dream the other night that I was at some kind of an event, and it's funny because there's not much content that I can really point to or see, but the feeling of it is very much what I remember. And I was at this, it was kind of an event, it was mostly outdoors, and it seemed like it was just very temperate and, you know, beautiful temperature. And it was something, people were all making things. It was like a creative thing. And as I looked at it afterwards, I thought it was maybe sort of like a mini Burning Man or something like that, where all the people were just seemed very content and very happy and very friendly and very creative. And there was there are a few details, but you know, there are just things that the whole thing was about being in this environment that seemed like an environment of love and connection and creativity. Which, I mean, that's really a different kind of experience. And
that I'm lost and I don't
have
exactly.
Yeah. And
when you woke up, you remembered it.
Well, and at before I woke up, there was actually something happened. Two people came up who I knew were the people that were responsible for, I don't know how, just they were the people who were the creative people who put this together. And they each, they were two together, and they seemed to be like partners or, you know, creative partners or whatever. Other kind of partners. Each of them welcomed me, a complete stranger, I never saw them before, in a very personal way. Personal but impersonal. You know what I mean? Kind of like the way how we know we love each other and we know we're all welcome. It was like that, but it was very definite. For me, I'm usually seeing how I'm separate when I'm with a group of people. No, this was, I was really being embraced and welcomed and like initiated into this creativity and love environment. Mm-hmm. And I woke up, and that's what I was feeling still, the feeling of that. Mm-hmm. And it's lingering. It's like lingering in there. And it's kind of like when I first came to the practice and I recognized something that I knew I had been looking for forever. It's sort of like I recognized that this is maybe where I am now or headed now, or maybe it's who I've always been and have been too conditioned to be there. I don't know. But it's very visceral. Mm-hmm. And I feel very touched, and sometimes I just kind of almost weep, you know. So I just thought I'd share it because it was so unusual, and it just feels really nice to be
being home.
Yes.
Coming home.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'm trying to kind of, I've been having like, you know, I'll think, well, that was so unusual. I'm not real creative, or I wouldn't consider myself an artist. You know, there's a lot of people doing very artistic.
Yeah, so, and I hope what you're saying is you become aware of that.
Yeah.
That conversation.
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, well, I'm not like that. No.
Well, but then, now
that
I'm...
That's somebody else, maybe the neighbors. That was dreaming the neighbors.
But now I'm looking and I'm thinking, wow, where did I get that idea? Because even just kind of, sometimes the way that I... Because I live alone and I do a lot of things by myself that would be handier to have somebody to take the other end of something or something. But I think about the way that I'm able to do things, and I think, well, that's creative. Mm-hmm. It's creative. And I'm owning it a little bit, you know.
Good. Well, good.
Yeah.
And don't own those voices.
Right. Don't own those.
What a campaign.
Yeah.
To get you to analyze it in that way, in a way that. Well, that doesn't really doesn't mean, because I'm not like that. I don't know why that would have, and just slowly talk you out of the experience that you obviously had.
Well, that's what was real, that's why it was really good that they did come and say something, because it made me realize that that wasn't true what they were saying. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I may not be Picasso or whoever's a good woman.
I would actually...
Oh, I wouldn't want to know either. Yeah. Good point.
I actually do well as
Yeah, so anyway, it's just been really interesting how, it's just been a few days and it's all...
And it stays with you. I hope you've made recordings.
Yes.
Lots of recordings.
Yes.
Listen to those instead of the voices that want to talk you out of the experience.
Yeah. And it was right around my birthday that this happened. And so, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe, you know, a new more accepting, creative, loving
world to be in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, lovely.
Lovely, huh?
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Chris.
So, this has to do with the assignment from yesterday, the radio show. And
you want to remind people what it, what it was?
I allow myself to love, but not dot, dot, dot. As I say that when that gets said on the radio show, it sounds like I allow myself to love, but not record and listen. I've heard it that way a couple of times, and I go, time out. just came up.
So the gap between I love and I love, but not before recording is going to be a little longer.
God in there, yeah. seems like a crowd that knows.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning.
Not knowing here. It's fun to, I think the questions are great fun. Conditioning always gets the first shot. the way they're phrased. But anytime the opportunity to talk about myself, conditioning just jumps in with, you know, I know who you are, I know what, you know, all the opinions, and just kind of lays it out.
And especially, I'm allowed to love, but not. I mean, that's an invitation to, you know, get right into what's wrong with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a direct line, which is really kind of helpful to be able to see it if you have an edge to get in there to see that that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. The answer was, but not too deeply or not too intensely, something like that. And it's so intimacy, and then as I just naturally fall into unconditional love with another person, whoever, whatever, conditioning gets uncomfortable, right? And then I think that's my discomfort, and then there's like a bricks get put on, that kind of thing. And so I was walking around the property today, and I can't remember what it was in relation to, but it was something like either a little shot of guilt that came in, or I don't know what it would be. Yes, probably. what I could see was that if I'm looking at conditioned mind, and typically, so in this system here, the message, the pervasive message is you're not good enough. That's kind of the bottom line on all of it. And so anytime I look to conditioned mind, that message is in there somewhere. And
whether it's stated or not, right? I mean, it could just be kind of
the Jaws music going on in the background. And as I look at it, then I can find the sensation that means that. Mm-hmm. And it almost never says that. It never directly comes out and says that's the deal. And then when I'm looking at conditioned mind, it's almost like, it feels like it's so, the relationship between conditioned mind and the human is that what I'm believing is that's just so obvious. You know, because I've just looked at conditioned mind forever, it's just so obvious. And so then when I'm in relationship with someone else, there's this sense that they can see that too, in the same way that I'm seeing it.
Mm. So,
and that's the breaks.
Okay, so that they can see that
because it's so obvious to me, I project it's obvious to them
that you're not good enough.
Right.
Uh huh. Mm.
And so there's no basis to be in a relationship with anyone at that point, other than the voices.
And the one who won't abandon you, no matter how bad.
Yeah.
And how did you catch on to that? Just through looking, answering that question, and going through the layers of it?
It's very subtle, Chris. It is very subtle. So doing the exercise, I don't know, there was some piece of that was kind of a residual that hung out.
Uh-huh.
And then just somewhere, you know how it goes, right? You're just walking around, and conditioning does something. Mm-hmm. I'm there to see it, and then it got hooked up with that piece of the exercise, and it's like, wow, that.
And the connection was made.
And the connection was made, yeah. So, fun to mess around with.
Because that piece of content, and that's that particular framing, however we want to talk about that. But the application, I can only guess, is
everywhere. Yeah.
For all of us, with whatever it is, that of course, whatever we're believing, we assume
everybody else,
that's their experience. How could we not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so that's subconsciousness. I mean, that seems like that is that process.
Mm-hmm. Well, and since ego's be all end all is getting us alone and isolated, so that has both our ears. That's really quite perfect because it is a it, it
it all funnels right back.
Yeah.
To
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a really big way, and just like that.
Yeah. And so, of course, we're going to run back to the comfort of that system. That really, I was kind of sounding flippant, but not really. That never abandons us, even though we are so flawed. You know, the implication, of course, is that other people will.
I never thought that's really funny. Yeah. But they might.
They might, but ego is never going to let me down. It's always going to be there because it sees me or who I really am.
Unconditional self-hate.
Big comment.
Jen. That's fine. Several times in the conversation tonight, this thing from today has popped in that I was walking to a far place on the property. I was going to clean a hermitage, and I was about halfway there, and I realized, oh, there's someone coming down the path really quickly behind me. And pretty quickly I realized that's not like the cadence or, you know, a human. So I turned around, and Sadie, our black dog, was coming down and had figured out at some point I had left the and it just struck me in that moment. I just looked at her and I said, you really know how to make a person feel loved. And I just thought, you know, that it feels like dogs in particular are such a perfect metaphor for life's unconditional love. In that it's not at all personal, but it's particular.
Ah.
You know? Like, so I am the person who cares for Sadie, so I'm the person she follows around. Mm-hmm. So it's particular. Mm-hmm. But it would have been any, she would do that with whoever had been her caretaker.
Oh, what a, yes. What a good thing to remember, huh?
Isn't that cool? Mm-hmm. And that, just that place of, you know, we are special and we are completely loved, but not for a conditional reason. It's a process that is, you know, that just is. Yeah. Yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah. And to have that realization with human beings, too, and we see it with children.
Yeah.
You know, they... You love them, they love you.
You know, and that's such a good point, because it kind of takes me back to that earlier where you could miss that, because I think a lot of people do. I mean, I don't know. I didn't have my own children. But it seems like if you're not realizing there's a process of unconditional love there, what easily gets attached to it is that thing of, it's why what happened on the border could happen. Because these are my kids. That's why I love them this way. It's not a process. It's a thing. They're mine. Mm-hmm. And I don't care about your kids in that way. Mm-hmm. But if...
And probably you don't really care about your kids the way I care about mine.
Exactly.
You know, you don't... Because nobody else loves their children the way
I love my children. You know, I'll have to go back. It's probably completely twisted. But one of the song lyrics that have been going through my head a lot... with the thing that's been, I actually know nothing about what's going on in the world. I just hear snippets of it from, but
maybe we should have you people write some articles.
And then, you know, we're the but Sting wrote a song in the height of the Cold War around. And the line, I don't remember this line, but something like, I hope the Russians love their children too. And, yeah, I mean, it gives me goosebumps, as I say, but because it's like, you know, I mean, just that, yeah. So, anyway, that's been...
That's very... good to remember, isn't it? It's a process.
Yeah.
It's not, it's particular, but it's not personal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think That's also true of the, at least for me, I feel like we've been looking at this a lot of practice. I sure have been looking at it a lot in my own practice. It's the same is true of the process of transformation, that it's handy for ego to try to slide over the top of things with practice ideas, but the transformation happens through the particulars, like through the stuff that comes up in this life, right here in front of me, that it's in moving through that. You know, so instead of just like, oh, you know what, I'm just going to accept all of it, it's just fine, there's nothing wrong. But it feels like there's such a, this to me goes back to the first conversation, the physical conversation. I've been having a physical come on as well, and there's so much richness in it. I have learned so, well, seen so much through that process. And one of the things, kind of the place where I am with it currently is, wow, I think I've talked about this before, the piece that shifted is not at all the piece I thought was going to shift. And what shifted is, it's completely all right. It's completely okay that it happens. And it feels like being with that experience, completely with the particulars of that experience, is so transformative and feels like it's what gives me access to the impersonal process. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. It makes absolute sense, which is such an argument for practicing acceptance all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because we have opportunities all day long mm-hmm. to practice acceptance. Mm-hmm. I'm going to eat something and it doesn't taste the way I thought it would, or no. I'm going to eat something and somebody else ate it before I got there, or whatever it is, those little tiny things that go on, I'm late and then there's traffic, and being with that is what kind of planes us, wears away that resistance to what is. And of course, the thing that goes with that is so important is it's not just accepting that there's something happening that I don't like. Mm-hmm. It's learning to like it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's where the magic happens.
Yeah.
Right, which is kind of what you were talking about in your adventures. It's seeing everything about that that is for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we move into that,
yes.
then we're living in the magic kingdom.
Yeah, I really have been having experience of that lately. Some months back we were talking a lot about undulations, and everything undulates. And one of the main things is, practice, or not practice, that's not the way to say it, but, how clear things are, or how cloudy they are, or, that sort of thing.
How enthusiastic I am, or how I'm really not enthusiastic. Dry spells.
Dry spells, exactly. And I have this period of time where it just, first of all, physically felt super strong at a time where that might not have happened, just strong and clear and just here and happy and all of those things. And I watched something come in. And it was an undulation, and it
took you down.
It was a wave. Mm-hmm. And what I watched was, I think the thing you talk about is the front row seat. It did take me down, but I didn't care. Like,
it was more interesting.
Yes.
Your interest in it was greater than your desire for it to be different.
And the gift was so clear. Mm-hmm. And that is the kind of thing where that starts to compound. Wow, this is all going on and it feels like a gift. Wow, that's amazing. Wow, that feels like a gift. Wow, there's a gift that you probably not just pick up a moment into itself. Because that feels like the place where it's like, that's just freedom. Because mm-hmm. then there's nothing to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Scott.
So I've been looking at what seems to be my relationship with authority. And it reminds me of an earlier conversation. It's like when I seem to fit the Enneagram type 2, and the acceptable message is I'm helpful and useful, and the unacceptable message is I'm worthless. And it's that same kind of thing where I don't experience myself as worthless. Like I'm not in touch with that. Yet it seems to be operating all the time. I'm in identification with being helpful and useful. Mm-hmm. And so this is another.
And so just to reflect that, so why would that be so important? Right? Because if you're not doing that, well, you would be worthless.
Yeah. And
as long as you stay in this side of it, it's not a problem. Because you're not going to experience that.
Yes, and as long as I'm in that side of it and not accepting, acknowledging the, quote, worthlessness, that's the primary belief, I'm being completely controlled. Mm-hmm. And that's a similar process that's been, feel like it's being pointed out to me about how I'm always trying to get approval from the authority. And it's just been this, like, it's like the saran wrap, like, boink, boink, well, what do you mean? What do you mean? And it's coming from all these descriptions.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. There's the other, oh yeah, I do that, and oh, that makes sense, and da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. But it's not coming in. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just listened to a recording between, and I can hear somebody talking, and what they're saying is making sense, and yeah, I'm following, and they can do all this, but yeah, I'm listening to Scott on this recording and with guidance, and it's like, that person's not getting it. It feels like a defense.
Mm-hmm. A deflection.
A deflection. Mm-hmm. A deflection. And so I've just been watching it a little bit more real time. I can see the effects of that supposed belief of trying to get approval. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, I'm in relationship to, quote, some authorities in a job role here. And so there'll be, like, a text exchange, or I'm following through or not following through with something. And there's a gap between what I send out and what I get back. And there is way too big of a reaction in between. It doesn't fit the situation.
Uh-huh.
And it's, and the more I look at it, it's like it is like a mini little trauma. It's an anxiety. What is that gap? What does that space mean? What did I write? I remember I was working on this. You know, there's all this coping mm-hmm. with something mm-hmm. that actually isn't happening.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's controlling you, right?
And that's what's controlling me. Yeah. And then I noticed, so now I'm seeing it go on all the time. So that's going on. It's the same thing, trying to be helpful, and in that identity of trying to get it right, or trying to figure it out, or trying to let it go and be here. You know, all these things of doing something without it being addressed, without it being acknowledged, where all of that, quote, coping is coming from. Mm-hmm. And I just realized that's been going on forever, and that I'm not
all
actually
that trying.
All that trying. Yeah,
right.
Without stopping.
Instead of being.
Without not being. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not in relationship to the person I'm texting with. Mm-hmm. There's these little glimmers, but then I'm right up into the authority in the head. Mm-hmm. That's the primary relationship mm-hmm. going on. Mm-hmm. And then I've been seeing, more so than usual, all the ways that that life guidance is being overridden.
Uh-huh.
And I actually started to write a couple of them down. Mm-hmm. Like, that was it. And I'm pretty sure it was it, because it comes around after a little bit, and then I hear that from the guide. It's like, dang it. There's got to happen. It's like, oh, that got overridden. Why didn't I just say that? Uh-huh. And it happens so, and then it's on the little other neural pathway that's been run so many times.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, now that I'm talking and I was listening to others, it's like, well, what a gift to see all that, because where else would I...
Oh.
I mean, I'm sure it's obvious to everyone else who works with me, but for
me...
That's
practicing. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. But it's amazing to have something operate right here all the time
yes.
that's your life, and not and then have it be that experience of the person who was on the call and guidance. Oh yeah, boink, boink, are you there? Where are you? You know, the saran wrap is like thick. You know, and to start, I don't know, even getting little lights through there to see, there's a film there.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of creepy, isn't it? To realize that we go around being a way that we don't actually know we're being.
Yeah.
That we're listening to a story about how we are.
Yes, exactly.
That has very little to do with how we are. But the story is so persistent. We believed it for so long that no matter what kind of information tried to come at us and say, actually, that's not the way it is, just can't see it. And so with practice, it does take that willingness to, and there it is, that will is hard, but, life holds every card. And we just keep bumping into it until it starts to crack open as you're describing it. The light is now coming through, and I am starting to see it.
Rather than coping with it or trying to get another perspective or try another, that cracking, that light, that dissolving is a completely different. It's almost like all the awareness was happening within the system.
Yes.
And it felt like I was working on it or something.
Yes. But which you were. Uh-huh. Which you were. It's just not the same. Right. As when it actually starts to break open. And the biggest difference I would project is that you really want it to break open. Mm-hmm. You know, for a long time, even people who are doing practice and awareness practice will say, oh, well, yeah, because I want to see, I want to be aware, I want to... No, don't. No, I actually don't.
Well, that's good to... That would be good to make a recording about, because I'm getting a lot of information from the voices lately that I'm not... The kind of the way I described about being in it and doing practice has been my experience of myself, that I don't really want to, that I'm hanging out because this is the best place I can be right now, but I don't really want it.
Well, first of all, ego doesn't really want it. Right. That much is absolutely true. And this is actually a terrible place to be. Right? You want to maintain ego. It's possibly your worst choice. Be suspicious of that information.
Well, that's why I kind of recording of what's true, because then of course, you're just hearing those voices all the time, and then it points out the behaviors. Mm-hmm. Well, look at that. I mean, you're not in there, and you didn't talk about it there.
Yeah, and now it points out the behaviors and go, thank you. Thank you, that's good.
Well, when you said life has every card too, I was like, thank God. Yeah. And I was imagining all the cards are these mirrors, because I mean, I just live in a lovely place where the mirror is just over and over and over until the person, so those cracks start to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing, actually, that life through people are willing to do that. I mean,
and always
the patience.
Mm-hmm. Always have been. Mm-hmm. And always are. Mm-hmm. All over the world, people are engaged in the same process.
Ooh, I like that image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but how do we know that about each other? It's not the kind of thing we go around talking about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, everybody.